Run It Up. It is a fresh week here from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. I'm Peyton Gallagher. Justin Scarlett is the one playing the music. As we fade into the week here, it's a Monday in the wake of a Tennessee game that raised some questions. It may have answered some questions. It's our job to figure out what the solution, at least that we took away from Saturday's game, is. And that's what the first part of the show will be here. And after that, we will talk of it no longer, because this is a sports show and Tennessee is not the only thing going on, but it is the important thing to this community, so I feel it my job to give voice to that. After all, I feel this show is an opportunity to serve the public. Maybe that's a little bit pretentious, but I do feel like that's kind of the relationship that I want to build here with this program and the listener. So, I will talk about Tennessee and what I saw. I'm in two minds. I'm on either side of a fence here and pretty divided about it. And I think this speaks to a broader question that Tennessee has been kind of wandering in the desert trying to find an answer to ever since Fulmer retired. So, Tennessee looked like a team that was playing against a better football team on Saturday, which is the case.
And they were.
Yes, Alabama is much better than they are. The offense that Alabama has is the best one that Saban has coached, I think. Mac Jones is putting up numbers pretty akin to what Joe Burrow did last year, and I've got some, I don't know, an outlook on that later in the show, which I encourage you to stay tuned for. But Tennessee, I think the play calling was fine. Personally, I know other members of the station have criticized it. I think there were moments where it was imperfect, going hurry up early on. Didn't work. You know, I understand trying it, trying to keep Alabama off balance, and I do credit Chaney for quickly realizing that was not going to be the solution and making a change, and in large part being effective there offensively in the first half. After that, things kind of got away from him in the second half. Tennessee's offense isn't going to score with that Alabama offense, and that kind of changed game flow. That's partly responsible for why it got so bad, because it forces, we've talked about this, it forces Tennessee to be something they're not and take the ball off the ground and put it in the air.
Well, I don't even think they threw the ball that much. I mean, they were still trying to run it. The problem was the ground game just wasn't all that effective in gaining big chunk plays.
I think it was fine in spurts. Alabama does a really good job of, like Bill Belichick does this perfectly too, he figures out what's going on at halftime, and Alabama adjusts. So Tennessee started to find traction at the end of the first half, running the football, and then Alabama made certain adjustments and forced them to do something different, and Tennessee's offense isn't necessarily calibrated to just do that. They've got one thing they do really well, and if you take that away, it becomes really hard for them. So anyway, digressing from that point, Alabama's offense isn't going to be stopped. Tennessee did about as well as Georgia did. Georgia, we think, is the best defense in the country. You know, the tackling wasn't fantastic. That is something that I've noticed become a larger problem week over week with Tennessee's defense at times, is guys are just kind of forcing to make a play, and they're not necessarily taking the best angles, and they're not wrapping up. And the game really, I knew the game was over, as weird as it sounds, when they had Najee Harris bottled up on that 3rd-and-2 or whatever, and he spun away from the defensive tackle who got the immediate penetration, and then got to the outside. Tennessee played it perfectly, strung him outside. There were 4 or 5 orange shirts around him, and he just cut up inside and fell forward for a first down. And I'm like, okay, they just don't have enough talent to match up with these guys. And to me, the game was over right there. But that is probably a little bit of overreaction and gut feeling as opposed to what actually was in front of me. It's just kind of like what I noticed in that moment. But again, aside from all that, and I don't know if I've said much to this point other than just rambling. I don't have notes down in front of me, just kind of spitting off the dome freestyle. But the dueling banjos in this situation are, yeah, so Tennessee was outmatched. They were not the better football team. I don't think they were coached that badly in the game. For like the 81st time, Pruitt tried that surprise onside kick, and it didn't work. And that's kind of where the game really spilled over and got out of hand. But to me, this the dueling ideologies is that it's year three, and Tennessee maybe shouldn't be in a situation where Alabama is that much better than them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, because the expectation is for Tennessee to be at this level now. And by the way, I think they do present as a team that was on par with Georgia when they were playing them. Confidence is probably shattered now, and this team wasn't the team that they were 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, the bye week is needed.
Yeah.
I mean, this team could go downhill real fast if this doesn't get turned around quickly.
The bye week is going to be crucial, and we say this every week, but it feels like with compounding significance, we're seeing these weeks go by, and it's like, okay, this is a huge moment for Pruitt, because I felt that this week, and I feel like if they can't turn it around the bye week, we're staring at a completely different thing down the backstretch of the schedule. They play Arkansas here coming up. Arkansas is a good football team, but the medley of teams in the middle of the SEC right now seem to be pretty level. That everybody below Texas A&M down to Mississippi State, they seem to kind of be equals. Ole Miss might be kind of in purgatory in between.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And Tennessee only plays one team above that tier the rest of the way. So they lost to Kentucky. Maybe they don't. Oh, yeah, they also play A&M. My bad.
A&M and Florida.
So, and that, the A&M game's an opportunity, because I think they could beat A&M. But I thought they could beat Georgia. I thought they should beat Kentucky, and they haven't. And that maybe is indicative of the coaching job that's been done here. All of this is to say that with Pruitt, I think he has not done a horrible job coaching this football team other than the situation at quarterback and the lack of development going on. The question now becomes, out of the bye week, is this the time to make the change? And I always circled that as the moment it would be. If you're going to go with Guarantano to the start, you need to ride with him through Alabama, because you don't want to throw Harrison Bailey out there against Alabama. And that seems like the natural choice at this point. Tennessee is in a throwaway year. They're not going to compete for an SEC title now. Why not figure out what you got in Bailey and start to develop him? I feel like the bye week would be the appropriate time to do that, and we'll see what Tennessee does out of that. But in terms of Alabama, this is a rare offense that Alabama has. That offensive line is dominant. Dickerson, what he was able to do. The measure of the best Alabama offensive lines is how good are their interior dudes. When you think of Barrett Jones or Ryan Kelly, some of the guys that they've had in the middle of those offensive lines over the years that have gone by, that's kind of determined how good they were. This one's really good. This might be the best one the Saban's had, and thereby the offense is that good. I don't know if there's a defense in the country that can stop them, and Tennessee did the best they could. The offense did what it does. Probably could have been a little bit better. Certainly could have been worse. Avoid turning the ball over, though, and you've got a chance in most games, and I think that's going to be Tennessee's case down the stretch. They lose to Arkansas. We're having a different discussion. Did they show as well as I thought they would and hoped they might? No. Was it as bad as Kentucky? No.
I mean, the Alabama game didn't really change my mind about a whole lot of things. Like, it, that was kind of on par for what was expected.
Yep, par for the course. And that might be the problem. Is that par for the course in year three is not what you want. You want improvement. So we'll see if they can do that down the stretch. They did last year, so we'll see if they can do that. Maybe that's not as fiery a response as everybody wants, because people want to be mad because Tennessee's lost three straight games.
Which is fair.
And that's fair. They should have lost two from three. This is all anger that's rooted in the Kentucky game, which was a calamity of errors that I have seldom seen on a football field. You'd be hard-pressed to find a team just melt down like that. And, again, maybe that's on the coach. Maybe it's just bad circumstance. I'm not sure. You will be able to be sure if this becomes a pattern. Because, you know, two in a row. One's a fluke. Two, something's going on. Three, okay, you've got a pattern. Four, let's see if they can break the pattern. If they lose four in a row, we're having a different discussion. If they lose out, I think Pruitt might be on the hot seat, but he is not getting fired this year, especially when the university is in a situation where they can't earn as much money because they can't bring people into the stadium the same way.
Oh, I definitely think if they lose out, he gets fired. But I think that's probably the only scenario.
That's not happening, though. Unless,
if he goes 2-8, they will find a way to get him out, I promise
you. Yes, but he's just not going 2-8.
I don't think unless he will.
Unless he does.
Yeah, I don't think
unless
he, will.
He does. Unless he does. In which case, yeah, we got to take inventory of everything. Everything.
I mean, this should still be a 4-5 win team realistically in my mind, right? I think that's fair enough. I don't think that's expecting too much.
Auburn's not that great. You know, Arkansas is beatable. They should beat Vanderbilt. Yeah, there are wins left on the schedule. And imagine how different the tune becomes if they beat Texas A&M or Florida. Or both.
I don't think this team's beating Florida, but yeah.
I think they could. Florida is pretty vulnerable.
I mean, they could.
They can't really defend anybody. It's kind of a problem.
And the second half meltdown at Georgia didn't really help the Kentucky situation either.
Sure. No. It is a snowball rolling down a hill towards terminal velocity, and it's getting to a point where maybe you can't stop it. And that's where we're at right now. Can they stop this negative momentum? That's the bye week comes at the right time. So the rest of the show is going to be devoted to mostly NFL stuff. I've got an interesting take on Trevor Lawrence and what's going on at the bottom of the NFL, which is quickly developing into one of the more intriguing storylines in the league, if not the most, even more so than like who could win the Super Bowl, at least to me. So we'll talk about that. All the quarterbacks at the top of this draft. I've got some friends coming on the show today to join us and help us in that discussion. That'll be fun. Stay tuned. This is Run It Up, WKGN Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Run It Up from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios at Fox Sports Knoxville. If you're just now joining us, we kind of vomited an explanation of Tennessee's game against Alabama into a microphone. Don't know if I said anything substantive there, but
it's not good, but it's been better.
Yeah, in short, football. That's the spark notes. It's also been worse.
It's also been worse.
Recently. But that's not an excuse either. This is a segment we call Couch Chronicles. The gist is, instead of me just saying this is what I saw this weekend, I gave it an alliterated name because I watch games from my couch. And the NFL.
Not a recliner? A couch?
No, couch.
Okay.
Exclusively. So, there was so much that happened in the NFL this weekend. So many fantastic games. So many developing stories that the 20 or so minutes I've got devoted to this is not going to do justice to everything that happened. So if I miss the thing that happened with your team, I'm sorry. I took note of it. I'm going to stay away from Tampa Bay and Las Vegas because, in full disclosure, I did not get to watch that game, and I don't want to talk about a game I didn't watch because, well, I don't know what I could contribute there. A game I did watch, though, will be where we start, which was the battle of undefeated teams between the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Justin, I know that the Titans are your team. I know that you're feeling the sting of defeat on a Monday.
It was a bad sports weekend.
Yeah, for the first time in 2020. Because as bad as Tennessee has been at times, the Titans have always salvaged it for you and left a good taste in your mouth coming into work on Monday. That is not the case today. You know, at some point, Gostkowski was going to miss one of these kicks. It's just the law of averages. He's been asked to make pressure kick after pressure kick, and as good as he has been throughout his career, he certainly is not as automatic as he has been at points. And even though the Titans put themselves in a position where they could win that game, it would have been pretty miraculous if they just continued to, at the death, find a way to extend these football games. With that said, I do think the Titans fully validated themselves in this game.
Yeah, the Titans are still a team that can compete with the best teams in the NFL. I think they showed that.
They definitely missed Lawan.
They did, but I thought 70 played pretty good. The guy that came in for him, that's his backup, right? I thought the tackle that played worse in that game was Dennis Kelly.
I mean, and to be fair, he drew the much tougher
he had T.J. Watt on him.
T.J. Watt, who's a top five pass rusher.
I mean, Bud Dupree isn't
also
awful.
Very good. Also very good. But yeah.
Yes, Lawan was missed. Adoree Jackson was missed more, which I know you're going to get to. They need him back in a large way. Just a team that has their number two and number three corner as Ty Smith and Jonathan Joseph in 2020 in the league that the NFL has evolved to with all the passing just isn't going to get it done, especially whenever you're playing a good group of receivers like the Steelers have.
Yeah. No, and for a lot of reasons, the Steelers present unique matchup problems for most teams in the league, but specifically the Titans. A lot of the best defenses now are built from back to front. Really good coverage ability, kind of in that Legion of Boom style. Now, this year we've kind of seen a swing the other way, but the Titans are certainly one of the defenses that are best in their front. Their back end is vulnerable. Now, Vrabel and company have been able to scheme up ways to minimize that in stretches, because you can scheme up a pass rush, especially with the guys that Tennessee has. When Big Ben is getting the ball out in under 2.5 seconds, your pass rush is never going to get home, and that's what the Steelers' offense has been all year long, because they can spread you out in four and five receiver sets where they've got Juju Smith, Chase Claypool. At times, Ray McCloud has been effective for them. And then, of course, you got James Washington and the guy who killed the Titans in this game, Deontay Johnson, and it really feels like it's a carousel of, okay, this is going to be your game, because we've had the huge Claypool game. This week was Deontay Johnson, and the Titans simply are a team that secondary is going to be exposed at times throughout the year, especially whenever you're putting guys on an island with these quick in-breaking routes that the Steelers live off of and the safeties can't help.
And they're really good after catch, too, which just compounds that.
Oh, yeah. And this coaching staff has created such a good offense to exploit the guys that they have. Because a couple years ago, it was bang it down the middle with James Conner, still trying to be the killer bees. And this past year where Big Ben wasn't available, I think made them reevaluate some things and may have been better for them in the long term. The Steelers are one of two teams right now that I think that could beat the Chiefs whenever both teams are at their best. It's them and the Bucks, and I've kind of softened my stance on the Bucks. And do I believe that the Bucks will be as good as they are playing right now throughout the year? I'm not sure. They signed Antonio Brown. I don't know what that means. They keep just adding these guys, and it's infuriating to an extent. But I guess, you know, you can't get mad when the Chiefs did it with Le'Veon Bell. It's an arms race at this point. But digressing from that, with the Titans, you come away feeling, I feel like, a little bit more inspired in Tannehill, because that was a game where they were down early, the run became a little bit off limits, and he still was able to perform and brought him all the way back into that game, ran a two-minute drill. For all the acclaim that DK Metcalf gets, and rightfully so, can we talk about A.J. Brown?
He's a stud.
Like, I never got why he slid into the second round, and a lot of people say that after the draft. And I get with the draft as much stuff right as I get wrong. And I'm by no means a scout or somebody who really has that deep football knowledge. But all A.J. Brown did in college was perform. And before that year, he was a top 10 pick in every mock draft. So I don't understand how he got to the second round. But the Titans are benefiting from it. I mean, behind Derrick Henry, show me the guy that is influencing their game-by-game productivity like A.J. Brown has since he's gotten back. He opens up so many things for them and makes them such a threatening team in the air, because even when Tannehill doesn't necessarily have it down the field, A.J. Brown's the kind of guy that can do exactly what he did the other day, which is catch the ball on a slant, beat the safety to the spot, and run 75 yards for a touchdown. And by the way, he's what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and the Titans just, they're the all-freak team. They are the all-dude team. When it's Clowney, who doesn't make sense, Derrick Henry, who doesn't make sense, A.J. Brown.
Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly, just a specimen. I don't know, man. This Titans team feels like they're a trade away in the secondary from really getting there. But they're a good team, and if things break their way, I think they do have a chance at the Super Bowl.
They are. They're a very good team. The defense struggles on third down quite a bit, which caused the rain slip, which is a direct result of the
secondary play. And every team in the league is going to have weaknesses. Every team in the league is going to have weaknesses. With the Chiefs, it's the run defense. If you can really, really exploit it, You got a shot. The Titans maybe have a few more than we cared to admit early in the year, but they're good. They're certainly really good. And I don't think anybody can deny that at this point. I keep going back and forth on whether or not they're truly a great football team, though.
I mean, I think they're a top five, top six team in the league right now, almost undoubtedly, even with the loss on Sunday.
Sure. Absolutely. Healthy at this point in the year? Certainly. And maybe when Isaiah Wilson, if he ever touches the field this year, gets back, that could influence some things because Tennessee, again, for the first time really looked vulnerable protecting Ryan Tannehill, who had taken the league low in sacks at that point in the year. Pressure is something that the best quarterbacks will struggle with. Saw it with Russell Wilson. He threw three picks when some team was able to finally really dial up the pressure on him. Tom Brady. When teams have gotten pressure on Tom Brady this year, he's looked below average. That's what happened in the Chicago game. I was impressed with Tannehill because the Steelers got pressure and he was still good. That's enough on that game. The Steelers are now the only undefeated team in football. That is because the Seahawks lost. We will close with that. That game was phenomenal. A couple notes on the Chiefs. This is going to get really annoying as I continue to say this week after week, and I'm trying to minimize the amount of time that I spend talking about the Chiefs and how good they are, but I do think that all of our conversations need to be governed by the fact that the Chiefs are so much far and away better than everybody else. I like to appreciate football. Football is awesome. I just, whenever I'm saying teams are really good, teams might be great. There is no team in the league this year unless massive injury strike that I think is better than the Chiefs, and I don't see a world where that can happen. Kansas City is just, like, doing whatever they want. They're experimenting. You're only going to see them really play in two or three more games this year. New Orleans, Tampa, and maybe Las Vegas. And unless they're highly motivated for the reasons like they would be if they played Las Vegas, or when they play Las Vegas later down the road, that's a revenge game. With Baltimore, they were trying to prove a point. If they perceive a team as a threat, they show up. And they've dominated when they do that, but like they're getting Chad Henne touchdowns at this point. They're scoring on defense and special teams. And when that happens, you have no chance. Le'Veon Bell is working into this offense, and I just don't see a world in which this offense gets stopped. They do definitely desperately need back Mitchell Schwartz as soon as possible because Pat got pressured for the first time really all year against Denver. It just didn't matter. By the way, Denver's a team that went into New England and won last week, so they're not bad. Although maybe New England's not that good. And that's what we're going to talk about now. There's cause for concern here. You know, Cam hasn't looked the same since he came back from coronavirus, which is something that it's like a guy coming off an ACL tear, and these are very different things, but I'm just going to try and compare them here. We always expect these guys to just come back and be fine, and sometimes, you know, it takes a while to work back into things. Maybe that's what's happening with Cam. You know, they can run the ball. They run play action the second most in the league, 39% of their pass plays. But I just, at this point, it's like, okay, we knew that the Patriots were not only missing Brady, they were missing Hightower, they were missing pieces on their offensive line, they were missing pieces in their secondary, they had to replace some free agents, they lost Eric Rowe and Van Noy, who have been such big parts of this defense year over year, and at some point, you just kind of got to admit that, well, Belichick is great, but if he doesn't have Tom Brady, the floor of this team goes a lot lower, and he can only do so much. So after taking that loss to the Giants, I always do that, the Niners, this week, I don't know what we can say about them other than the Patriots might be not that good, which is something I thought early in the year. So I think we're at a point where the Patriots are never going to tank. But long term, it's probably best for the Patriots to not be that great this year and kind of reevaluate some things. There are five quarterbacks that I think are going to be worthwhile of first-round draft picks this year. They're not getting Trevor Lawrence. They're probably not getting Justin Fields. They might be in the discussion for Trey Lance, but Mac Jones and Kyle Trask are both guys that I could see Bill Belichick being wildly successful with down the line. They could trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. Dak Prescott might become a free agent. They could get Matt Ryan. There are options. I just don't think the Patriots have it this year. I think they're the third best team in their division pretty clearly. That's what I've got on the Patriots. Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's fine. Started 0-for-5, threw a pick, lost Odell Beckham. You want to know how he answered? He threw 22 straight, actually, completions and won them the game. This offense does not get the best out of him. He is best whenever he's able to create on the fly, not have to read a defense, and just go make a play outside the pocket. But he's doing what he's doing right now, getting under center, running all the play action they do, running all the heavy multiple tight end sets that they do, because it's what's best for this team's personnel and it's what's best for the team. He's going to be called upon a little bit more now without Odell being able to stretch the field and open up these seams in the run game. We'll see if he can do it. I was pretty inspired, though, by the performance that he gave after how badly things went in Pittsburgh. He was banged up, was not a good start in Cincinnati, threw that early pick that Odell got hurt on. Odell's going to miss a year. That's a shame. But now, without Chubb, without Odell, with the record they have, it's going to fall on Baker whether or not they make the playoffs. And they've got about a 50-50 shot, I think, at this point. We'll see how they respond. Last game that I wanted to talk about, that Seattle-Arizona game was probably one of the best games of the year, period. I don't know how that gets topped. It was total anarchy. There were fantastic plays. You see Tyler Lockett go nuclear for 200 yards, 3 touchdowns, I think it was. You had that play from DK Metcalf, which we'll talk about later in the show when I do Sunday's Best to close things out. But this, I thought the Cardinals were going to win this game, and it wasn't how I thought they were going to win it, but this is the flaws of the Seahawks kind of getting exposed. They did not trail in this game until the final buzzer, when Zane Gonzalez forks up, hit that kick. That's in large part because the Seahawks only registered 1 of 48 dropbacks with a pressure in this game. So when you've got a lead, that's usually an opportunity to throw the kitchen sink at your opposing quarterback. Try and get him to make a mistake. And Kyler did. He threw a big pick in the second half. But the fact that the Seahawks can't get any pressure, they can't generate any pressure at all, left the Cardinals in this football game. Kyler Murray just kept making plays and kept making plays. And ultimately, Russell Wilson, you know, he threw 3 picks. 2 of them were like, what the heck, Russ? Especially the one in overtime, because you're trying to protect the football at that point. You're playing for a win or a tie. You don't want to give the ball back and give the Cardinals an opportunity to win the game, which is exactly what he did on a third down where he was trying to make too much happen. It's like the situational awareness just disappeared. And I love Russ, and we've talked about this, but this game was always going to happen at some point because in letting Russ cook, the offense has become a little bit one-dimensional. And this offense is at its best whenever Chris Carson, who's a really good player, is getting fed. All the running backs, DJ Dallas, Carlos Hyde, who can be effective given volume, they need to touch the ball. And I thought they got a little bit too pass-oriented, especially when they had the lead. Credit to Vance Joseph, who was brilliant in the way he designed these zero blitzes where he'd bring 7-8 guys to the line of scrimmage and just drop them out at different random points and blitz a corner in like he did with Byron Murphy to get that huge sack in overtime. It was just so unpredictable. And Seattle's offensive line never caught up to it. Russ is phenomenal. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. No quarterback's perfect, but he cost his team the game in this one. That interception in overtime just can't happen. And the Cardinals are real. I don't think that all 4 teams out of the NFC West are going to make the playoffs. I just think that one of the Saints and Buccaneers is going to be one of those 3 wild cards. But all 4 teams are good enough, I believe. You have anything to say? You didn't watch this game, did you?
No, I didn't catch much of it.
Yeah, fantastic. Dre Kirkpatrick was a rough night for him. Feel bad for him. The Cardinals definitely need to play Byron Murphy a lot more. But yeah, the entire season we've talked about. Russ is fantastic. This offense is really fun. These receivers are great. Pete Carroll elevates everybody because of the energy he brings. It's all about competing all the time. But when they played good teams, some of their weaknesses were going to get brought to light. Like the fact that they can't pressure anybody, so their defense is the total liability. Like the fact that this offensive line's played okay, but they haven't been great, and they are certainly pretty young, aside from DeJuan Brown. Those are things that can be exposed. So that's why I've had the Seahawks at like 6 in my power rankings every week, was what happened on Sunday night. And it's not going to be the last time we see it. Sometimes Russ will be able to overcome it, sometimes he won't. That's why I don't see him as a Super Bowl contender, at least not right now. Those were my couch chronicles. I'll tell you what I got wrong this weekend. We come back. Run it up. WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. This is Run It Up, a Monday edition. We had a weekend so loaded with football. And I said some things about football and football games that were not correct on Friday. So we're going to do a few of those right now. We'll start with the most blatant one, which was me saying that Bo Pelini was... And I never advocate, I'm not doubling back here. Let me make that clear. I'm not making excuses for myself. I never want to advocate for somebody being fired. I just thought that the writing was kind of going to be on the wall here. And Ed Orgeron wasn't going to put up with an inept defense. But to his credit, LSU showed up defensively. Elijah Ricks had a pick six. And they were able to shut down South Carolina enough to win this football game. Justin... They ran the ball a lot in this football game, and Miles Brennan was hurt, so that's part of it. But do you think LSU returning to that kind of ball control style of offense, even if it is more so out of shotgun than ever before, is something that they can do to protect Bo Pelini's defense? Because I'm still not super confident in this group.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, any time that you are able to control the ball on offense and keep the defense off the field, it's going to help out your defense. I mean, not only are you giving them more time to rest, keeping them fresher throughout the game, especially in those late-game scenarios, but you're also keeping the ball out of the other offense's hands. I mean, that's why we saw that style of offense be so popular for so long in a defensive style of football, just because you're pretty much just playing keep away at that point.
Yeah. And it's this transition was always going to be so fascinating to me, because with LSU, everything that they did last year was going to be so difficult to replicate. And it was such a divergence from what their identity has ever been. So I figured that they would at least try to be what they were last year, which wasn't going to happen. So what they did next was going to be interesting to me. And we'll see what happens. Brennan is supposedly still the starter on this football team. So we'll see what happens when he comes back. We'll see if they decide that John Emery running the ball, if playing the way that they did against South Carolina is the best way for them to win. Because I think it might be.
I think it probably is.
It limits the exposure your defense is facing. And they gave up 24 points in this game. Held Colin Hill to 12 of 22. The fact of the matter is, though, you look at this and it's South Carolina ran. I'm trying to do the math in my head here. 52 plays in this game.
51, yeah.
51. And in 2020, that is an astronomically low number.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina's offense wasn't bad necessarily if you just go through the box score, right? I mean, they still averaged over 7 yards a play.
Yeah.
They just didn't have the third down success that LSU did. South Carolina was 3 of 10 on third down. LSU was 8 of 10. I think that's the biggest thing that you see coming out of this.
Yep. And LSU played good complementary football. TJ Finley, the 3-star true freshman quarterback that came in, he actually may have been a redshirt freshman. I'm going to check on that. But Finley comes in and is good. 17 of 21, 265 yards, 2 touchdowns, most of that in the first half. And then whenever they got the lead, they let Davis Price and John Emery run.
I want to know how you would pronounce TJ Finley's hometown. I'm going to spell it for you. You ready? A little side note here, side quest.
Oh, my.
How would you? P-O-N-C-H-A-T-O-U-L-A.
Ponkatoula.
I think that's probably pretty close.
We'll check our sources. So, but Finley is really solid in this football game. And, Miles Brennan, he's been through it, and I want him to be successful because he's had to wait his turn, and he was a highly touted guy, and he stuck with it. But maybe with another bad performance at some point, and he's not really been bad at any point, but if LSU loses another catastrophic game, I don't know if they don't go to Finley. They're recruiting quarterbacks in this next class, but the point was there that I was wrong. I thought Bo Pelini would get exposed again. His defense was helped out by the offense, but they did their job in this football game. They got off the field on third down. They scored on defense. LSU also got their first kick return touchdown in Tiger Stadium, I think, since 1981 in this game, which was alarming. So we'll move on from that. I also said my high voltage take of the week this past week was that Tennessee would find a way to keep it within 13 against Alabama. That did not happen. I thought the defense would find a way to get a few more stops than they did. I thought the offense would play a more ball control form of offense more effectively. Because, again, you see these drives where they just blast cap these massive holes in defensive lines and just run the ball down the field. And Eric Gray and Ty Chandler have dudes running by him in the backfield, and they're bursting into the second level and picking up 12, 13, 14-yard chunks. And that's how Tennessee needs to play offense. And they did that at times against Alabama. I don't know where it goes. They have one or two drives like this in these games against Kentucky and Alabama, and then it just disappears. And as an offensive line, I don't know what's happening. Why is that not sustainable? And if somebody's, I'm genuinely asking, if somebody's more knowledgeable than I about this, explain it to me. I know defenses adjust, but you feel like when an offensive line figures something out, and they're starting to really dominate like they did on that drive where Tennessee got their first score, the field goal, and then proceeded to score a touchdown soon thereafter on the next possession, I believe. You have to wonder, okay, why is that not sustainable? I know sometimes you get behind the chains, and you really have to avoid penalties if you're playing that way. But I don't know. It just feels like it's very streaky right now. Cade Mays said the offensive line's been inconsistent and okay, but you would think at some point here in the near future they would start to really gel. And again, you've got the bye week coming up. So maybe that helps to kind of put things together. I thought Pitt and Notre Dame was going to be a close football game. That was not true. Pitt was never close in that game. I might need to start rethinking some things about Notre Dame. Defense is genuinely fantastic. Ian Book's playing at a very high level. Yeah.
Yeah, 45-3 on that one.
It was not close. No. Nope. Last one here. I said last week at a point that I thought that there was a probability, if not a likelihood, that all 5 Heisman candidates come from Alabama or Clemson. Etienne, Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, Devontae Smith, and Najee Harris. And while I definitely believe 4 of those guys are probably going to make it, should have given a little bit more credit to Justin Fields.
Yeah, he's still good.
He's still pretty good. I remember, I'm not too old, or not too young, I don't know how you would say this, but I'm not too young to remember a time where Justin Fields was emerging from the Elite 11 camp rated above Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence picked a situation in Clemson where he was going to be able to play. He took the job from Kelly Bryant. And Kelly Bryant had had a very good season the year before and is a good quarterback. But Trevor was a great one. You saw Justin Fields pick the wrong school. He sat a year behind Jake Fromm, who he is better than. Maybe not for that offense, and, you know, maybe not in a situation there where Jake Fromm did anything to lose that job. But I certainly think Justin Fields was better than him.
You think Fields and Lawrence can go 1-2 back-to-back like Luck and RG3 did in 2012?
Oh, I think that's a likelihood at this point. I was going to maybe stake the case that so much of the lore with Trevor Lawrence, and rightfully so, comes from that freshman season where he has that game against Alabama in the national championship, and you're like, whoa, this is not something a true freshman in college football has ever done before. People speculated that offseason that Trevor Lawrence could go number one in that draft class coming out after his true freshman season. He is the most hyped up prospect since Luck, for sure. I think more so than Luck, probably since Manning.
Yeah. I mean, that's a comparison that it gets drawn to, right? I mean, Trevor Lawrence, lifelong Peyton Manning fan, wears 16 because of Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
On and so forth.
He's a lot more athletic than Peyton was.
Thanks, Bush Jones, by the way.
Yeah. But I think we got to kind of recognize that Justin Fields, at least I do, kind of forgot how good he was. And he looks, by the way, better than he did last year, and he will tell you as much. He was special. Special against Nebraska. And I don't think Nebraska is a great team, but virtually flawless special. 20 of 21, 276 yards, 2 touchdowns, and I just don't see a way that, barring injury, this guy is not there for the Heisman ceremony. So unless they take 6, I'm sorry, Devontae Smith, it's really hard for a receiver to get in that room. Do you think there's any world in which Justin Fields goes over Trevor Lawrence? Any world?
I mean, it's going to depend on team fit, combine, blah, 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 but right now, no. I mean, like you said, Trevor Lawrence has been that dude since he was like 15 years old. And I know I'm saying that as a Tennessee fan, and he was heavily recruited here into Clemson, so on and so forth, but still.
I guess what I'm saying to you is that they were neck and neck coming out, and a lot of our preconceived notion about Lawrence dates back to his freshman season, which is an opportunity that Fields didn't get. And they've been stride for stride with one another since then, when Fields went to Ohio State and became a starter. And it was the same thing with Joe Burrow, and it usually works out. But a lot of it, I think, is narrative-driven. The fact that Joe Burrow did that at LSU and brought them into the new age and did it the way he did, but specifically because it was at LSU, because guess what? Mac Jones is putting up the same numbers. He's not going to get number one buzz, or maybe he will. We'll talk about that. I keep teasing.
I don't think Mac Jones is getting number one buzz.
We'll talk about it. I don't think so either, but it may not be as crazy as you think it is. I'm just saying Justin Fields has been just about as good as Trevor Lawrence has for the last 2 years. And if he continues what he's doing this year, maybe we should talk about it. Maybe it should be a discussion. I don't know. That's hour one, folks. Run It Up will continue after this. WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio.